The West Live. The West Live with Ben O'Shea.
Fearless Friday with Jeff Parry.
Yes, and the man himself joins me in the studio. We would never downgrade your dog to a little poodle. Yapping chihuahua.
Corgi.
Yup, yup, yup. Yep. No. A big Rottweiler.
Do corgis bark? They do.
I don't know if the Queen's corgis did. I think they were quiet.
Yeah. Well, welcome back too, mate, because it was Clarkie last
Thank
week.
Thank you. Yes.
And you're back.
Are you soldiered on?
Yes, we did.
He'll be filling in for me next week as well. I'm taking a week off for school holidays. Now, let's talk budget surplus, because we knew that the budget numbers for WA were going to look pretty healthy, even healthier than expected.
An embarrassment of riches, isn't it, for the Premier? An embarrassment because he's having trouble spending it. He's got so much money. It highlights how by the length of the street Western Australia has performed compared to other states and the federal government, who probably won't see budget surpluses for a long time. Of course, we know that it's a result of a very sustained iron ore price. Much to the chagrin of a lot of the other premiers, we're getting a fairer deal from our GST now, and so we're doing okay that way. The government has shown a lot of spending restraint, a lot of expenditure restraint, and has ended up in this enviable position of having $6 billion as a bit of a war chest. But you don't think that. That people haven't got their hands up, groups haven't got their hands up to say, well, give some of it to us.
Well, a lot of public sector workers want a pay rise at the moment.
They want 5%, and at the moment they're getting about 3%. And plus a $3,000 bonus, but it's not quite there. But McGowan's just saying, that's it for the moment, but that's the top offer, that's the best offer you're going to get.
Well, the problem is if you give everybody, even though you can't afford a big pay rise, it's pretty hard to wind that back if then, the economy takes a bit of a downturn and it doesn't take long before, the pay bill starts to weigh down the economy. And we know health is obviously a huge proportion of the annual budget too. There are problems there, but they're not as easily fixed as just throwing money at them.
No, it's not. And it's a lot of the infrastructure projects that the government had on the books have been put back because construction is just maxed out. They just can't get the workers. They can't get the companies. They've spent, I think, what is it about the infrastructure spend now is $7 or $8 billion, and they just can't sustain that. I think there's something. The welfare groups are certainly calling for some, help. As I said yesterday, our struggle street's got a lot longer now for a lot of people who are going backwards. The wages haven't kept up enough. There's a growing list of working poor. WACOS was saying yesterday, food bank, the demand for food bank on food bank is up something like 21%. People have never ever been in that position before, or have been on the edge, and now they're basically going under, and they're saying, look, these people need help. The people who administer them and run these services need help, because they're not included in this increased pay offer, and that they want a rental relief scheme as well. So, I think there's something to be said that something needs to be done in that sector, because I don't think anyone's disputing that the people who are really doing it tough are a growing block of our community.
Yeah, I think absolutely. Like, there are things to spend money on. That is one of them. I think tourism is another thing that they could really look at, supercharging that, because you've got this rare opportunity of having all this money. It's how they spend it when it comes to tourism, right? Like the tourism commercial, I don't know how that's going to go. When I was over in Queensland last week, I was watching the TV, free-to-air, and in the space of about an hour, I saw the WA Walking on a Dream commercial with the flying whale shark. I saw an ad for tourism in Victoria, and I saw one for Tasmania as well. I can tell you, ours was the worst.
Did anyone come up and say, hey, that flying
whale sharks have you seen over your way?
Yeah, is that guaranteed if I
but
come
seriously
over?
Though, like, I was looking at them going, the Tassie ad looks great, the Victorian ad looks great, the WA ad looks great, but what the heck is it? Like, what is the message there that people thinking about a holiday can action? And I just don't see that being successful.
That campaign got a touch up at the time, and the questions were legitimately asked. What are your KPIs? I mean, that this would be a success. I mean, how many tourists coming in would constitute this campaign being a success? And they don't want to go there because, I mean, that's a rod for your own back if you start putting numbers on it. But the jury is still out on that ad, no doubt about it. Like, and I've seen the Melbourne one.
It's not that it isn't pretty, it's a pretty ad, but...
Yeah, it's excellently, you know, it's very, very computer generated, very highly produced, distorts... You've got bending Boab trees.
What does it tell you, about what you can do if you come to Western Australia? You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, I agree. Go to Elizabeth Quay.
But even that, what can you do there? Like those people having a little dance out on the end of the bridge, like what the heck? You know, like that's why I think, like, you look on social media, that's been so successful as a driver for tourism, because you're literally seeing things that you can imagine yourself doing. And I think it needs to be more literal if you're getting people to spend their money. Like, to just look at it as a concept and go, oh, that's pretty, sure, fair enough. But if you're trying to get them to spend money, which is the aim of the game, I don't know. And now, earlier this week, we were talking on the West Live about the new legislation that the state government wants to bring in to address antisocial behaviour in our nightlife precincts, the so-called PEP laws. What did you make of that?
I think the spirit of it and the intent of it is very good. I think some of it will probably work, but there are difficulties there that the government did have problems and the police had problems addressing when they rolled this out. I mean, as I said, the intent. Enza Racco, who's the widow of Giuseppe Racco, who was one punched and died back in 2020, has been working on this for a couple of years, just to basically along the point that people who commit crimes should never be allowed back into that area, or certainly should be excluded from that area for a length of time, and that's what the government has done. But she did say at the presentation, this has gone further than she thought it would. So this sort of there's two areas. There's the mandatory ones, which, you know, the exclusion 5 years goes on people who've been committed, still in jail for murder, assault, sexual assault, drinks, biking. That's an interesting one. They automatically get a 5-year ban. The other ones are they're sort of like a temporary thing, which I described as a move on notice on steroids. So instead of a move on notice, you get banned for up to 6 months on the say-so of a police inspector. Now, I think the mandatory ones, what's not been sort of guaranteed or assured is how the police are actually going to, you know, some guy's been away for 15 years. Most of the coppers, wouldn't know who he just wanders in and does his thing. And, you know, and there'll be hundreds of them, how the police are expected to pick these people out from a crowd and say, hang on, you shouldn't be here. Here's 2 years in jail. The other one, though, is the temporary one. And I think the problems with that are the not infringement on civil liberties, but there's the more a propensity to get things wrong in that case. So a guy's gobbing off at police. The policeman's got a body camera. It's being watched by live. Being watched by an inspector, so it might be a bit ropey, but it's streamed into wherever the inspector is, and he's looking at it, and maybe the inspector's having a rough night, and he says, bugger him.
Slap a ban on him.
Just get rid of him for 6 months. Now, I think there's no appeal. Now, I think that's probably one of the flaws. The fact that you have no appeal against some bloke who's probably having a bad night or could be having a bad night or whatever, or he doesn't get the context of what's going on there, says, look, sort this out, just get rid of him.
Yeah.
And so I think that's a problem there that need to be addressed. So there's a lot of trust being put into the police on the beat, which we normally do anyway, but I think that goes that little step further.
Yeah, like I think a move on notice serves that purpose anyway. Yep. Like you're removing the person from the area. Like to me,
so you're an obnoxious drunk.
Yeah,
bugger off for 24 hours and
6 months. Like to be able to just that to me is a punishment that needs to have maybe a little bit more oversight over how it's implemented than what is proposed under this current legislation. It'll be interesting to see how it moves through the Parliament. Not that anybody can really do anything about it.
No, they can't. There's a lot of things that can't be done because the government has the majority and can just push these things through quickly, as it is doing on with some of this new legislation. As I understand it, the laws will be reviewed at some stage by the Ombudsman. I mean, and the behaviour of the police will always be monitored, I guess, by the CCC and Police Internal Affairs. But I think these are just sort of, these are, particularly with the temporary exclusions, which not that temporary, 6 months, there's the real risk that things can go wrong here and you've got no comeback on the police, and meanwhile you're banned for 6 months.
Mm.
And getting drunk and misbehaving, yeah, shouldn't be a 6 month ban. Charge them.
Yeah, charge them. Exactly. If they're doing something that bad,
put them before the courts.
Yeah, I agree.
Not just some discriminatory or indiscriminate use of a temporary exclusion order.
Yeah. And you'll be digging into this issue a bit deeper on Flashpoint this week.
We're looking at it for Sunday. I'm filling in for Tim again this Sunday, and we'll be looking at that and talking to Enzo, the widow of Pep Rocco, and also Danny Hodgson's on with us as well. He's another victim of a one punch. His attacker got, I think, 3 years or less, just under 3 years and 8 months, I think, for his attack. And he's, of course, living with probably lifetime debilitating injuries.
Yeah. It's just very, very sad. And so watch that, Channel 7 on Sunday.
10 o'clock, yep.
And now let's talk National Cabinet. Anthony Albanese is meeting with the state premiers and chief ministers this morning as we speak. And one of the main things on the agenda, as we've mentioned already today, is this issue of scrapping mandatory COVID isolation. And now Dominic Perrottet wants it. Other premiers have said that they want to see what the chief medical officer has to say on the matter. Which way do you think it's going to go?
Dominic Perrottet from New South Wales apparently is the driving force on it. As I understand it, the WA government, certainly we were told yesterday, hadn't had any chief medical officer or chief health officer advice on it. So I'm not sure which way Mark McGowan will fall on this. It's just treated like a flu now. In fact, people are getting flu that's worse than anything COVID's dished up for a lot of...
It's a bad flu going around.
I had it. And people I've spoken to have had it, and it's, you know, it knocks you around. So I guess, you know, I think it's probably time to get rid of it, just gut feeling, just to punt it. No one really sort of seems to give two hoots too much about COVID anymore, unless you're in a hospital or certainly in aged care, where it's still causing problems. But I think it's probably time to go.
Yeah. Well, like I was at an event last week where it was packed. Like it was absolutely packed. A few hundred people in a small space. Everybody was, you know, like because of the music, yelling at each other from about, you know, 5 inches away from each other's faces.
And Spraying each other with saliva,
And
Ben.
I thought, if I don't catch COVID for a second time here, then COVID is gone. And I didn't catch it. So,
yeah. Yeah, I don't even know what the numbers are now. I mean, they only come out once a week now, don't they?
Once a week.
They just sort of like, it's an email that you don't bother to open.
Well, the AMA doesn't want the mandatory isolation scrap just yet. They came out this morning. The president of the Australian Medical Association, Steve Robson, told ABC News Breakfast.
Not surprised.
Put the public at risk, he reckons.
Yeah, not surprised. I mean, there are an abundance of caution at the AMA, and I've always sort of pushed back a little bit against moving too quickly. But I think... I think they're pushing against the tide on this one. I think most people are sort of in the position now where, it's COVID.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, fine. I think you're right.
To have your say, or if you have a story, email the team at thewestlive@wanews.com.au.